Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Hello and welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. This is your host, Carrie, and I am so excited that you're here. Now, you know that I love all of my guests, and today is no exception. I have a fantastically fabulous young woman to introduce you to. She is just a delight. She is playful. She is creative. She is smart. She is powerful, and we're going to have a really fantastic conversation today. It is my great pleasure to introduce you today to Patricia Kosulich. Patricia is a Southern California-based social innovator, playwright, and advocate. She loves working with ideas, new organizations and initiatives, artists, visionaries, advocates, and unreasonable people. I love that so much. Patricia is a multi-passionate person, and she loves using interdisciplinary approaches to tackle complex problems in our community. Her goals are to advance the field of social innovation, augment the growing movement of conscious business, and advocate through the art of story. She is a graduate of the Master's of Arts in Social Innovation from the University of San Diego, and she loves to tackle complex societal issues with multidisciplinary approaches, design thinking, and hybrid financial models across multiple sectors. She also is a playwright, and her play is called The Great Imitator. And in this play, she blends documentary theater and imaginative departures from reality. She's on a mission to change the way we view healing, build community, mobilize policy change, and fundraise through storytelling. Please join me in welcoming to the Inclusion First Podcast, Patricia Kosulich. Hi, Patricia. Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. I'm so excited that you're here. So excited to talk to you today. How are you?
Hi, Carrie. Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm so impressed by the work you do and respect you so much. So couldn't say no because of that and just trust you and who you are and what you're doing. So thank you.
Thank you. That's amazing. So Patricia, before we jump into the questions, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, we'll skip the birth story because that goes way back. And in the present, I currently am involved in the social innovation sector more broadly, especially with storytelling. And I love collaboration and working with others, especially in interdisciplinary methodologies, which is super broad. I recently wrote a play, The Great Imitator, which is a piece designed to advocate for the Lyme disease community. And I also volunteer in a variety of capacities within the tick-borne illness community. So I'm on the advisory board at Write Out Lyme and also co-facilitate for San Diego Lyme Alliance, which is an affiliate of Bay Area Lyme.
I love it. And I love that you are a playwright, that you are a producer, like all those things are so cool to add into, you know, the list of experiences and how you're just like expanding and changing the world as a person. So I think it's amazing what you're doing.
Thank you. The producer title, I'm still getting used to it.
So let's jump right into the questions, Patricia. And the first question that I have for you is, what does it mean to you to be an activist in 2021? And second part, do you consider yourself to be one?
So in 2021 specifically, intersectionality is key. Understanding how there are so many dimensions and nuances to a person and to a community and how all of those intersect.
Hmm.
That's the short answer. And I think that awareness is so important because sometimes you look at these topics as individual issues without looking at how it's almost, to me, I visualize it like a wheel with different spokes, and you're going to have sort of uneven spokes depending on what issue you're looking at, if that makes
sense. Okay, sure.
And do I consider myself one? I would say yes, just because I believe that if we're in the practice and the process of, then the answer is yes. That doesn't mean we've arrived, though. It's not a final destination, and it's definitely not perfect.
I love that because, you know, one of the missions of this podcast is to help people to see activism and anti-racism and all of these social justice movements as like a spectrum more than like a destination, right? So no, I'm not Martin Luther King and I would never claim to be like anywhere near that. However, I'm doing something. And so I'm on the spectrum moving in a direction that is, you know, increasing or creating more impact or whatever that is, right? So you know, being able to broaden that definition. I think a lot of people like, oh, I'm not an activist because I don't X, Y, Z, but what do you do and what difference are you making? And how can we start to be aware and intentional about that and then like grow it, right? Grow into our activist shoes, if you will.
That's a great explanation. And it's interesting because I've heard people that I really respect say, oh no, I don't have that title. I didn't earn that title. And I hear it in other with other titles too, like with a lot of writers, oh, I can't be called a writer. And it's just interesting. Yeah. I err on the side of if you do the thing, then embrace the title.
I love it. Stepping right into that power for sure. So British, we were having a really interesting conversation, which happens on podcasts a lot, like before you press play and then after you hit stop. And so I would love to bring everyone in on that and talk a little bit about like anti-racism and number one, what do you think that it is and why is it so important, especially right now at this time that we're in?
So why I think it's so important at this time, and this goes back to our previous conversation and a bit of my background, is I was raised with the view that we're in this post-racial world where we can be colorblind and say, well, I see everyone equally. I love everyone. I treat everyone the same, regardless of what they look like. And that is no long, like, that's not a good way. And I thought it was at the time, which it's now a process of unlearning and then relearning. And it's a shift to make of being educated and realizing that what we were taught at one point is hurtful to a group of people that we care about. And maybe that's an oversimplified way of saying it, but anti-racism. So I remember in school loving all of the social justice type narratives, like in literature, especially anything to do with liberation was my favorite. And I thought, oh, rah, rah, like we've done it. We've overcome this. And felt so, it's just like, I felt so, yeah. And, you know, I've always been into advocacy in some capacity, just in different, with different focus areas at different times. And so then hearing that that was not the case and that was a lie was
shocking.
Yeah. And I was like, what do you mean? I've been living a lie. Like, and I shouldn't laugh, but it's just, it is shocking. And
how did that happen? Like, where were you? Like, was it a moment? Was it a like gradual realization? Was it a class? Like, how did this veil get pulled back for you?
That's a really good question. So when I went to college, I started making more friends with different backgrounds from me, different socioeconomic backgrounds, different ethnic and cultural backgrounds, different regions, you name it, different sexual orientations that I hadn't heard of prior to that. So I had some really, really close friends specifically who were Black, Asian, and a mix, and who started talking about their experiences. And it was hard for me to stomach. It was interesting because they would say things to me like, oh, I feel discriminated against, or this is happening to me, or that is happening to me. And I was going, I don't understand. Like, I love you. I think you're great. Why would anyone not be nice to you? And unintentionally was gaslighting friends. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Because I thought, well, you know, you create your reality. Like, it's great. You know, how could this be happening to you? And gosh, it sounds so silly when, I had one friend, well, actually two in particular, who were so patient and continued to share their experiences. You know, we continued to be friends and they would just sprinkle in things that were happening in their lives that I was uneducated about. And when you trust someone and love someone and care for them, you listen, right? And so even though it didn't make sense to me, I just continued to hear this and they were very patient. And when I said something that was not PC or not correct, they would challenge it in a respectful way and continue to build our friendship. And so eventually it got through. It took a little while, which I wish I could say it took less time than it did, but it took a while. Yeah. And then I did take some classes like history of race and ethnicity in the United States, which was very helpful because I had no idea the policies that were in place, like the Chinese Exclusion Act for one and eugenics and some of these things that we didn't learn about in K through 12 that are extremely racist. And you realize that wasn't actually that long ago. And there are residual impacts of that today, even though the policy is no longer there.
Sure.
So that was eye-opening. And there was a little bit of liberation theology and a couple other classes. And I think the friendships were most important, though. I even briefly attended a couple of groups and was asked to be multicultural coordinator, which was really random. I kept kind of getting pushed into those roles because someone would say, oh, you should do this position. I was like, I don't think I'm qualified or fit for this position. But just kind of kept ending up there and then was kind of felt this responsibility to learn more and just kept putting myself in spaces, like attended a Black church for a while in San Diego. And here we are.
Wow. Yeah. No, thank you so much for sharing that journey and for being open and vulnerable with us about this. And so, you know, for people who maybe haven't had the veil pulled back, like, why is this work important? This work important for them as well?
At least speaking in terms of what I know, what I've experienced, people I know, we all want to be compassionate and kind humans. We want to love and be compassionate toward other humans. We tend to view ourselves as such. Mm-hmm. And so what can be hard is when we're told you're racist or what you're doing is racist, we want to defend ourselves. Like, well, that's not my identity. That's not who I am. I'm not bad. Whereas that's not a helpful way to actually be a kind or compassionate person, because it doesn't mean that you're intentionally bad. But there could be something that we don't know that we don't know, which ultimately is humility and maturity in and of itself. Also, I forgot your question. Could you repeat it?
Okay. It was a beautiful answer so far. I know we were talking about why it's important for people who haven't pulled back the veil to, like, still, you know, to come on this journey with us too.
Well, it's part of being in alignment with those views of ourselves. For example, if I believe and want to be and aspire to be a compassionate person who advocates for justice, inclusion, and equity, then there's a responsibility to learn and to acknowledge that there may be things I was taught that were inaccurate. And gosh, this is a really hard question, Carrie.
I know.
How many times do I need to attempt it? It's not enough to be neutral or to say I am not racist. What we really need is to say this exists, and there is something I can do about it, and it's I have to fight it. Is it an MLK quote? The one about being silent about things that matter?
I think so. yeah, you know, like the idea of this, you know, I mean, MLK definitely talks about the damage that the silent, neutral majority like perpetuate by not using their power, using their voice, because racism is a force, right? It's a thing that moves through. And if you're not interrupting it, then you're not helping. In fact, you're letting it continue on, right? And so he definitely talks about that. So yes.
Perfect. Thanks for stepping in so eloquently too.
No worries. So no, this is really great. So Patricia, I would love to, so you've given us this, like this beautiful picture of kind of your journey and how the veil got pulled back for you. And like, what happened next? Like, how did you continue to integrate your awareness and, you know, your manifestation of inclusion and equity and being this compassionate person that is much more holistic and aware? How did you continue to incorporate that into your life?
Listening was probably the biggest piece, just being open to listen and to hold without judgment when someone shares what's happening to them or what they're experiencing. And that's probably one of the biggest things that most of us can do, is simply listen when someone says, I'm struggling. Don't go, oh, it can't be that bad. It's like, no, I owe it to you to hear this. And there are so many other steps, but that's the most essential thing that comes to mind. And I did find myself in a few roles in college where facilitating discussions about this was part of it. So I co-facilitated the Emerging Leaders course for undergrads, and we talk about intersectionality and identity and what that looks like. And that actually was really helpful and healing for me as an individual, because coming into school, I had a lot of personal experiences that had been difficult. And a common issue that we see is someone will go, oh, well, I've struggled too, therefore, blah, 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 blah. Right. And something that I had experienced too is people making assumptions about my life, like, oh, your life looks so perfect and cushy and privileged because of X, Y, and Z, not knowing all of these invisible things that were happening. And so I had a chip on my shoulder, sadly. And what intersectionality helped me see is how we can be really privileged in some areas and then extremely not privileged in other areas, and how they all work together. So for example, and where this really illuminated the concept for me was becoming ill with Lyme disease, an invisible illness, because I had all of these invisible issues. I felt like I was dying. Long story, but my life was falling apart and I was in constant chronic physical pain.
Right.
And was not in a good place. So when someone would say, oh, your life looks so perfect, didn't feel good. Right. And so, and I thought, how can you call me privileged when it's literally a disaster and I'm in survival mode? And it wasn't clicking for me yet. I wasn't ready for it to click yet. And then a few years into treatment, once I finally had a diagnosis after 8 years of fighting for it, I finally started to feel better. And once I started to feel better, I realized how much access I did have, even though it was obnoxious, how long it took. I went, oh my gosh, without a parent or a caregiver or someone who was able to attend appointments with me, without being able to pay and see out-of-network doctors, without being able to this, I would have never gotten better or even reached a point of being able to function. And then started realizing how, even though there was huge lack of privilege in terms of health, there was a lot of privilege in other areas that allowed me to get better in terms of my health. And so then it was eye-opening and seeing that if someone didn't have privilege in the other areas that I did, it would be even more impossible for them to have any hope of recovering their health. Mm-hmm. And that was really what did it for me. It was like the missing piece to go, I see what you're talking about now, and what can we do about that? So how can I use my experience dealing with this thing that's horrible for anyone, and then look at that bigger picture of within that community that I belong to, and I feel very passionate about people in the invisible illness community. Where are the gaps? You know, where are we missing people who have additional barriers in addition to the barriers that we all have? Right. That's quite a mouthful. But that's essentially brings us up closer to the present day.
Awesome. So yeah, let's jump right in there. Tell us about Write Out Lyme. Tell us about the work that you do. Tell us about how you're looking at privilege differently and how you're looking how to make Write Out Lyme more inclusive in what you're delivering and the experience that people are having in that community. I would love to hear this.
So great question, Carrie. And when everything was receiving a lot of attention, when these topics were more in the public eye within the last year and became popularized, it was a lot to take in. And, you know, suddenly part of this, all of this discourse. And so I thought, okay, this isn't new, but what can I do that's realistic and manageable within the sphere of influence and corner of the world that I live in, which is something that you and I have talked about a lot. You know, how do we take action within our pocket of the universe? Yeah. And so that was where the Lyme community came in. And we started by organizing the Creating Equity in Healthcare panel, How You Can Help. Thanks so much, Carrie, for being part of that. Okay. You really helped us tie it all together. So you're such a gift in that regard, and many other regards as well.
Thank you. Clarify.
And that was really a launching point for us to investigate what was happening in our community. And sadly, there's a huge lack of representation in the Lyme world. It's an infectious disease that can affect anyone. Anyone can catch it. But when you look at the groups, you see predominantly white people. And there definitely are, it's definitely a diverse community, but we don't really see that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a journey to try to move forward. And it's something I don't feel totally qualified to speak on, but I'm still learning and still making connections, building relationships, and we're seeking to improve access and figure out what we can do to move that forward. Something we did at Write Out Lyme is we were concerned about, because our primary function as an organization is to award grants to financially make it more accessible to receive Lyme treatment. And we were concerned about whether we were even reaching a diverse audience. And so something that we added recently was a checkbox just to capture that data and make sure that we were rewarding to a diverse pool of applicants. And we're pleased to find that it was a diverse pool and we were able to reward accordingly. So that's one of the main things we're doing. And I'm in the process of exploring and learning how to have further conversations about equity in healthcare and find partners in that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think all of that is really great. So I want to start with the grant applications and, you know, adding that data collection point to really get an understanding and how powerful it is to like intentionally like seek out that information, right? Like we need to just look around and see like, okay, like in the status quo, like what's happening, who's here, who's not here. And then what do we do based on what we learn from that, you know, that data collection point. And so you were able to see that, okay, we've got a pretty diverse community. All right, well, how do we make sure that we're carrying that diversity through to how we're creating our awards for grants? And so that tells you you got a lot of information, then you were able to act on that information, still just like looking around what's happening right where you are, which I think is like, that's really the key to doing this work, to stepping into an anti-racist or social justice path, is just looking where you are and just following the breadcrumbs that are there, which I think your example is a really good one just to demonstrate that.
Well, thank you. And something else that was interesting during the process of writing my play, The Great Imitator, I conducted a lot of interviews within the community with patients and their loved ones, caregivers, doctors, advocates. And there was also a photography project attached to it. And it was, this was the very beginning, my baby steps of becoming public about having an invisible illness and meeting people. Because admittedly, prior to that, while I would tell people one-on-one, I did not share it on social media. I was not interested in joining groups, wasn't interested in reading about it. I didn't want it to consume my life or my identity. And therefore, when I decided to become an advocate, it was starting from scratch in terms of connecting. Mm-hmm. And probably 95 to 99% of everyone I met at that point was a white woman. And that was it. And I wanted to have a diverse project that represented all of these different voices, but really struggled to find, like, I knew that it was there, but I couldn't find it, which raises questions of the safety of being able to share and the safety of being able to disclose disability or illness status and the concerns that raises for different people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which has come up in a variety, which has come up a number of times. Like, beyond that, now that I've made a bunch of connections since then, we also wanted to cast actors who, as much as possible, who felt comfortable disclosing and wanted to embrace being part of a production that was really meant to amplify performers with illness or disability. Mm-hmm. And again, it was pretty much all white applicants. So it's a really sensitive topic.
Yeah. And so when you find yourselves in these circles that are homogeneous, like, what are the things that you can do to try to change that, right? And so that sounds like that's a question that's in your mind. And it doesn't always happen overnight, because this is relationship building. This is trust building, to your earlier points. This is getting access to networks that might be closed to people who look like you because of safety and all these different things, right? And so how do you start your detective journey into that and figure out, you know, okay, how do we include these different groups? How do we invite them in a way that they want to come in and be a part of this? And I think one thing that I always encourage people to do when they're trying to diversify their groups is, like, get your why in order. Like, decide, like, why do we want to do this? Why is it important for us to be diverse and representative? Because that's something that you can share with different people in different networks. Because especially now, like, no one ever wants to be a token, right? And more people are aware and, like, hey, we, you know, we're looking around, we've got no Black people, we've got no Asian people, we've got no whoever, let's go find some. Like, but why? Like, why are you doing this? Are you doing it to check a box? Are you doing it to CYA? Like, are you doing it because diversity actually matters to you and you know that it will enrich the work that you're doing? How do you get that, your talk track around that and then sharing that? And the thing is, like, we're all attuned to, like, authentic and inauthentic. And so when you share your story, when you share your why, it'll either resonate or it'll fall flat if it's not authentic, right? So you can make up a great why, but if people feel that you're just there to use them, to exploit them, then they're going to opt out of that, right? But if your why is genuine, someone will feel that and, you know, you'll start to build those bridges. I don't know that it's easy. It's also not always obvious where to go in every group and sector and industry. It's all different, right? But setting that intention, understanding why you're doing it and why it's adding value to what you're doing, and the importance of it, and then finding people who are like-minded in these other groups to start to build those bonds and those collaborations with. So I just say, keep going, you know, keep going, keep trying, don't give up, because there's someone out there who feels like you and would love to be a part of the project. And in that, maybe you can build bridges to other people who look like them too.
Carrie, I have a question for you. What, if any, advice would you give to someone like me who is coming into these spaces feeling like maybe it's inappropriate to even ask, or and just wondering how to start that conversation and how to do it in a way that's of service and appropriate and honoring of other people? Because really, that's the intention. And sometimes I wonder, oh gosh, how do I even be in this space in a way that's respectful?
I mean, I think starting there is great because you're already aware that there is like a delicate nature, that there is respect that needs to, you know, flow in different directions versus like assuming and like charging in, right? And I think sometimes people get in trouble with that, that latter idea, because then it comes across as like, I'm entitled to get this information, to ask you, to have you participate, all of these things, right? So even the question that you ask shows that you're not in that space and that you're wanting to be conscientious in how to build those relationships. And so I think some of it is the same of what I said, just knowing that there's people who are like-minded, who you can find and connect with. Now, the thing is, you might try a few different angles or a few different places or people, and you might strike out because that person wasn't the right person. They weren't in the right space. They didn't want to, which all of this is totally valid, right? Like, you don't, nobody owes anyone anything if they don't want to participate or they aren't open to a conversation at that moment or ever. It's, you know, that's their call to make. And so I think one thing that also happens is that if we try to reach out to someone who's different from us and we get like slapped down in whatever way, we're like, oh no, that didn't work. And so I can't do that anymore. I don't want to put myself out there, or they in air quotes don't want to engage in this way. But that's not true, because that's just one person and we're all different. And so if you go and talk to someone or go to try to invite someone in and get rejected, like, that's just one person. That person doesn't represent all Asian people or all Black people or all disabled people or all whoever. And keep trying again, because you'll eventually find the people who are your people for the project that you're looking for. And being authentic, being sincere, being open in your questions, and then just being, you know, a good listener and reading the situation too, because if someone isn't feeling comfortable, then, you know, backing off from that and that being okay to deal with, and that being okay. And then just trying again in a different place, in a different space with a different person, if that makes sense. I don't know if I answered your question, or I'm so not used to getting a question thrown back at me, but I love it.
I can throw more, Carrie. I can throw more.
Please. but no, I think, I mean, it's a really good question, right? Because that feeling of like, I'm not sure if I can, if it's okay for me to be in this space, if it's okay for me to like assert myself or to, you know, give my ideas or ask questions or ask for things. Like, I think that that is a question that a lot of people have. And I'd say that if you have the inkling, then that is work that you're being called to do, and you're being called to be a bridge, right? And so how do you find the other bridges? And that's like really your mission, is to find the other bridges. And when you find a bridge that's collapsed, like, that's okay, because there's other bridges out there too who want to connect back with you.
I'm picturing this complex diagram, like neurons connecting of just all the bridges.
Totally. That's really good. I love it.
We want more neural pathways.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to create like these inclusion points, right? And be like this spreader of inclusion versus something else, right? And so how do we find those people that are on that same wavelength with us?
One more question, actually, because we talked about intersectionality. I talked about my experience with how we went from point A to point B of being more aware and more open and willing to take that step into looking at anti-racism and wanting to practice that. And something I hear a lot is, don't insert yourself, don't compare. And 100% agree with all of that. So I'm curious if you have any comment on how to hold your own experience and then in a servant-hearted way move into honoring the experiences of others in marginalized groups different from your own, and like fully honoring that. And also, how — this is a double-barreled question, so sorry — but how to, because I think sometimes talking about your own story when speaking to someone who's in the same group as you can be helpful.
Sure.
And I'm just curious if you have any comment on any of that or any advice.
Yeah. So I think one thing to remember always is that our stories are never in competition with each other. It might feel different than that, but at the end of the day, like, your story — I'm talking about truth here — your story exists as valid 100%, and so does mine, right? And so those stories are not in competition. And so it's totally fine for me to have my story and then hear a story that is completely different, maybe even conflicting with the messages of the world that I've received, because it's not attacking my experience. This person is just sharing their story, and it's valid and it's real and it's true through their eyes and their lens, right? But that doesn't invalidate anything that happened to you or didn't happen to you. It's not challenging your story. They can all of our stories in this little neuro network can all coexist without doing anything to anyone else's story. And that's like just kind of a paradigm shift that we as people have to make, that we're not in competition in that way, that your story is not a threat to my story. Your story might be a threat to some of the things that I believe about myself or about the world, but that's like a different thing, right? And so how do you pick that apart? And as a person who is on a social justice path, on an equity, inclusion, anti-racist path, like that's part of the work, is to bump up against those things that challenge our beliefs, the things that need to be unlearned, and travel through that with as much grace as possible. We're not perfect. Sometimes we're gonna, like, you know, have more struggle with those conflicting ideals that are bumping up against ours than others. And other times it'll be easier for us to release it, right? And so just knowing that whole experience is a process, and is a process that is an important part of this work. And so when you're holding that space, and you gave a really beautiful example of like listening earlier, when you're holding that space of listening, your story is set to the side. It's not in danger. It's in a little box. It can't be broken into. You're good. And so you're actually just holding space for that other person's story, holding space, you know, empathy, friendship in a lot of cases, right? Because when we're sharing these stories with each other, typically like you're not getting a story from a stranger. And that's one of the, you know, one of the key things about story sharing is that, you know, the relationship that you have with a person matters, and how safe someone feels confiding in you matters. And when you're asking people to share or in these groups, like if you don't know someone, you have to be really delicate and conscientious and soft-handed about how you're handling it. And even when you do know them, then you're even more, you want to be naturally more, be more of a caretaker of the information that they're sharing. You know, I like to think of it, if I'm sharing my story with you about racism, like that's a gift for you to learn from, to take, to think about, because, you know, these stories are traumatic, and they can be extremely traumatic or they can be a little traumatic, but they are traumatic. There's a cost, right, for sharing stories of trauma. And, you know, as someone with an invisible illness, like you, I mean, see, this is what I'm doing. I'm like actually eating my words right now, because I'm like, oh, I'm assuming that you know what that's like too. Maybe you don't, right? So,
you're good, Carrie. You're good.
Maybe you don't know. So you always, like, we're constantly checking ourselves even. And instead of assuming, like asking or not asking and just waiting to get the information that, you know, that you're sharing with me, right? And it's a struggle, because our nature is to assume that the person standing in front of us is like us or not like us. And whatever intersection I choose to connect to, I'm going to like try to bond over across what I think are our similarities, but I actually don't know what your experience is. And so how do I approach that in a way that is like a blank slate, like open, and I'm like, you know, a drain. I'm just listening versus like asserting all of these different things on you. I totally took a turn as I self-corrected myself. But yeah, I mean, going back to what your original question was, like, how do you do the dance and hold the space for someone's story, and let it just be as it is, and not try to judge it or compare it or invalidate it, and just let it be.
Perfection. Thank you, Carrie.
You are going to be such an amazing podcast host. I can't wait to be on your podcast.
Thank you.
Okay,
Patricia. Got to flip it back on you.
No, this was really good. I appreciate those questions. They're very thoughtful. So I have two more questions for you. This time has completely flown. So the first question that I have for you is, from the work that you've done, from the journey that you have taken, from revealing the veil to starting to think more explicitly about how you create inclusion and equity in your corner of the world, what would you say is like one of the biggest lessons that you've learned that you can share with our listeners today?
Listening would be number one that comes to mind, which don't want to be redundant since we talked about that earlier, but I think humility and listening are the most important. And then just being aware of who you are and what you've experienced and healing your own world and embracing who you are and what's shaped you and being at peace with all of that and integrating it prepares us, in my opinion, to be more compassionate to others. Hmm. If I'm compassionate with myself, I'm more ready, willing, and available to extend that and hold that space for you and receive it and also have more energy to mobilize as well. So humility, listening, and then doing the inner work. And then also starting small. If you can start big, great. But a really wise mentor of mine advised, pick the smallest thing you can think of. It seems too small to you, and start with that. And then do that well, and then you can build on it. Because when we're advocating for justice, even if there's a moment in time when it's trendy, it is a long game. And so rather than being a flash in the pan, if we want to see change happen, it requires the long game. So being strategic, starting small, and then being able to build and progress instead of quitting, that's really where we can move the needle.
That was incredible. I'm absolutely going to end up quoting that in something going forward. That was really great. I want to know who this mentor is. And I love that it landed so powerfully on you.
Thank you. It was Rachel Lozano Castro.
Oh, wow.
Well, do you know Rachel?
She's amazing. I do.
Yeah. I'm a big fan. Too.
Yeah. She's amazing. So there you go. That's fantastic. Okay. So last question, Patricia. For the people who are trying to figure out where they can start, maybe they're straddling the fence, maybe they're not sure how to jump in, maybe they're afraid to, what advice can you give to them to like activate them to find that thing that they can start with and start to create the change around them?
Personally, I'm a big fan of looking at what are you passionate about? What do you like to do? And if you don't know your passion, that's okay, because passion is a buzzword. Sometimes you don't know, and there's no shame in that. It's okay. You have a lifetime to discover and to explore and be curious and discover who you are and your gifts and all of that jazz. But if you know what you like to do or who you like to be around or what cause or community you are most involved in, look around and start there. And that opens up so many possibilities. Like in my case, I was already an active member and leader in the Lyme community and said, well, this is where I spend the majority of my time. I'm going to do something here. And if we all did that, Carrie, you said this when we first connected back in the day, not that long ago, but back in the day, you said, well, if everyone did that in their little corner, then we would see widespread change because we're all doing something where we have the most influence. So that was really encouraging. And I'd love to see more people discover what they can do. And it needs to fit in. Like, yes, it's important to be willing to be uncomfortable. It's important to be willing to put ourselves out there to advocate for something that maybe doesn't always affect us personally. But if you can find a way that aligns with who you are or what you value, then it's going to be so much more effective because it fits you. And that way it can even sustain you or be sustained and you can see it through, as opposed to taking something on as a should that maybe doesn't feel like a natural fit for you.
That was so good. I was like holding myself back from interrupting because that was like really, that's really great advice, right? It's so good. And I love just how you articulated this idea of like the should. So if I do something that seems extra, eventually I'm not going to be able to do that extra thing. But if I'm doing something that's already in alignment with who I am and what I'm doing out there, it's like a natural integration, a natural evolution, and it just grows with me. Versus like, you know, I think I'm going to stop. Like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like a hobby that you might pick up because you think you should, you know, German just isn't working out for me anymore. So I'm going to stop. Versus like,
Spriggins, you know, did Deutsche.
right? See? Versus like, oh, my family, like my sister-in-law speaks Spanish and she lives next door. So I'm going to pick Spanish because that is something that I, you know, integrates into my life. If I didn't have, you know, a German sister-in-law, for example. So I was trying to like save my metaphor.
But it was a really good, it was a good metaphor. Do you have a German sister-in-law?
I don't, but I do have a Mexican in-law. So that's going to be the language that I pick, right? So, you know, that's integrating in your life. That was the point that we were making. Oh, Patricia, this has been super fun. I love that you asked questions. I love that we got to laugh. The time is seriously, out of all the ones that I've done so far, this went the fastest. So it's been a pleasure to talk with you. I thank you so, so much for being here. If people want to follow you, want to follow your work, where's the best place for them to find you?
Well, I published my website last week, www.patriciakosolich.com. And also folks can follow me and DM me on Instagram at patricia.kosolich or reach out via LinkedIn, any of the platforms. I'm here for it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Patricia. You are amazing. This was a blast to talk with you.
Thank you, Carrie. Thank you so much for the work you do and for being so inclusive and reaching out and building those bridges and pathways. The word of the day.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.